Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharski, Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning. Vanderbilt, the story of the weekend in sports, much less college football, taking down Alabama. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Gentry Estes from the Tennessean. Gentry, good morning.
You said taking down Alabama, and I said, we'll take you down to Alabama.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, Gentry.
We will go down.
Gentry, down in Alabama, seeing the after effects of the big loss.
Gentry, do you
have
an update?
How is it down there?
Good morning, guys. Good to be with you.
Good to have you with us. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So there's a lot to kind of sift through here in the aftermath of all that. I want to start. Gentry, I think the most shocking thing to me, and I was at the Preds game watching this all take place on Saturday, and by the time the second quarter rolled around, I just looked down the row on Media Row, and I looked at Alex Dory, and I said, Alabama can't stop. Like, they cannot stop that Vanderbilt offense, and that was true throughout the course of the entire game. I was blown away by the game plan Vanderbilt had, the execution of the offense, and that part of it, I mean, there's nothing fluky about it. That offense of Vanderbilt kicked the butt of Alabama for 60 minutes.
Yeah, and I think you can tell a lot of the national narrative on this was always going to be Nick Saban's not at Alabama anymore, and this is, you know, the first indication of the empire finally crumbling, and maybe so. But those who actually did watch this game had to be impressed with how Vanderbilt won it. Yeah, like you said, this wasn't an accident. I mean, you could tell early on there were indicators of how Vanderbilt could win this game, but I sat there and watched it for about 3 hours just waiting on that moment where Vanderbilt was going to Vanderbilt up the situation and find a way to lose, or Alabama was going to get something done. It just didn't occur to me, you know, that this was real until right to the very end that you finally say, you know what, this is actually really going to happen. Even as you said, even early in the game, there were indications that Alabama was having a really hard time dealing with what Vanderbilt was doing offensively. And, you know, Vanderbilt's defense is still susceptible to the big play.
Yep.
And, you know, you saw that too. But that's an opportunistic group. They do force turnovers, and the two that they forced were both huge in the course of that game. And, you know, it's pretty – I've been to a lot of games, and I've been surprised a lot, but this was certainly up there in terms of just how shocked I was.
Well, no doubt about that. It was unbelievable to watch happen. And another example, and this is the most extreme example, obviously, Gentry, but Diego Pavia and his impact on that offense. Number one, I think the attitude and the belief that he brings with him. But then number two, the execution, right? I mean, look, he completed 16 out of 20 passes. He threw for 250 yards, two touchdowns. We know what the threat he is in the running game. I mean, that was high-level football that he played in that game on Saturday. He has been unbelievable to watch for this team.
Diego Pavia, and I remember when New Mexico State went to Auburn and won last year, and I remember watching that game and thinking it at the time. Pavia is that guy who may not impress you for a lot of the games, certainly throwing the ball, but when it gets to about fourth and three, he's going to have his best pass of the whole game, and you know that's going to happen. The clutch factor with this guy is just unreal. The play he made on fourth down, that was probably the biggest play of the game, was a touchdown pass. And he's going off his first read. It felt almost impromptu what he did. And he does that about as well as anyone. I mean, you don't want to compare a guy to Johnny Manziel. It's a different player, different level. But that's what it's like, a guy who can just make plays and kind of rally his team around him. And yeah, it's really nothing new. Everybody's kind of waking up to the idea of what Vanderbilt has here. But even going back to the preseason, you could get that sense. He'd been with the team maybe 10 minutes, and he was already voted the team captain, and you had all the teammates talking about what he meant to them. And it's just – it's a mentality that that's infectious around a team that was already being doubted anyway and being told how there's so many things they can't do just because they're Vanderbilt. And it kind of fits Pavia. He's a guy who, you know, had to walk onto a JUCO and has always been told he wasn't, you know, going to be able to make it at this level as a quarterback. And, you know, it's been a remarkable fit, especially when you bring in his coaches from New Mexico State and a lot of his teammates. That's a pretty comfortable situation.
So what does Clark Lee do to ensure this isn't a one-off glory moment for the university and that it is, in fact, a major building block?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's – you go to Kentucky, I think a lot of what happened to Alabama this weekend too was – I mean, look, they had such a big win over Georgia, they were going to come out flat, and you could kind of expect that. And I think they took Vanderbilt lightly, and I'm not so sure people are going to be taking Vanderbilt lightly the rest of the season. They still have a very tough schedule, and I don't think they're going to sneak up on anybody anymore after what happened. So it's certainly fair to wonder, you know, how can they build on this? And I do think they need to build on this. The idea, you know, everybody talked about what Nick Saban said on the Pat McAfee show of him saying Vanderbilt was the easiest place to play in the league because you have more fans than they do. Nick Saban wasn't wrong. I mean, that's how it is. And it's not just for Alabama. Most of the SEC or big-time teams that come into that stadium do that. Virginia Tech had more fans than Vanderbilt. So I feel like there's still a level of consistency they need to show and prove this wasn't just a flash-in-the-pan kind of moment to be able to get fans to consistently want to come out and support the program. So it's a heck of an opportunity for them. And it does feel like everyone's kind of treated this as a lifetime milestone kind of victory. And you know what? It doesn't have to be. They have some big games left on the schedule. And, you know, again, for a team that's been doubted and told it what it can't do, you go beat the number one team in the country and now anything seems possible. So it could, you know, if there's more confidence here, who knows what this team is capable of.
Gentry, on that front, I said this yesterday on the show. To me, that environment Saturday night and the aftermath of it, everything, is a perfect example of why investing in athletics matters. And we've talked about this with Vanderbilt, right? Like it's taken them a long time to get to this point, and they finally, you know, with NIL and the transfer portal and certainly the facilities that are under construction over there, they're starting to enter into that modern era of athletics. But Saturday night, I think, a good example of what athletics can do for a program, particularly in football, when you come away with a win like that. And like it this one does feel different, right? Like Vanderbilt's had some ranked wins. They've had some good seasons. They've not had anything that approaches what we saw on Saturday night. And I'm interested moving forward here to see what that does for investment level in the program, what that does for fan interest in the program, and then ultimately, what does it do for Clark Lee and recruiting? Like, they've already had one recruit flip in the aftermath of that to go that they've landed. I'm really interested to see, like, the tangible impact of kind of building that program and taking that next step, what it looks like, and what a win like that can do for it.
Yeah, no doubt. And, again, I think it kind of does go back to you need to be able to sustain it a little bit. If they don't win another game this year, I think you lose a lot of the goodwill here. But at the same time, one of the reasons, and if you look back at the end of last season, they were really in a bad way. I mean, they had gone 2-10, lost 10 games in a row. You know, people were looking at the schedule this season and going, you know, what do you do with this? And, you know, they had all these new players, new coaches. And I feel like one of the big reasons that Vanderbilt was able to get to this point so quickly is the NIL discussion. They got a little more serious about that in terms of what they needed to do to keep up in the SEC. And I mean, that's really, I think when you look at college sports right now and you want to say, gosh, how are they doing this? The answer almost always is going to be NIL, because it's something that you have to do. And if you get serious about doing, you can get a lot better real quick. And certainly in the transfer portal, which is what Vanderbilt did. They brought in some awfully good players to replace the guys they lost. I feel like they were able to change the culture very, very quickly. If you're able to keep doing that and continue to keep up NIL-wise, then Vanderbilt, everyone has always looked at Vanderbilt as, gosh, how are they going to keep up in terms of NIL? You know, they don't support the program the way this and that. Vanderbilt has an alumni base with some money, wouldn't you think?
Yeah.
I've never understood why Vanderbilt would be at a disadvantage in a city like Nashville with a lot of opportunities that wouldn't exist in, say, Starkville, Mississippi. So I've never understood that. I've always felt like if Vanderbilt really got serious about this, they could be a lot better than they are athletically. And while I don't think they're doing some of the things that your top programs are doing still, I feel like from the time I've been here the last 5 years, they have gotten a lot more serious. They've done a lot more work with their facilities. They've really stepped it up in NIL. I think Candace Lee deserves a lot of credit for that in terms of understanding what was they weren't doing and what they needed to do to be more successful. As much of a pain as it is to go over there and deal with the construction and have to walk through mazes to get anywhere, I've always said I'm not going to complain about it because I was one of the people writing about how bad the facilities were and how they needed to upgrade it. Say, hey, that's what they're doing. So that's you can certainly see the progress, even as the construction, you know, nobody likes dealing with it.
Can you get a real feel on a day like Saturday for what it's going to be like when it's done?
A little bit. PK, I don't know if you've been out there. It's half done. One side of the suites on the as you're sitting in the press box, the suites on the left side are done, and it looks pretty good. They've got a big screen up there, and you know, so if you're looking one direction, you're like, hey, looks pretty good, and they look in the other direction, it's not finished at all, and they're working on that side. It's, you know, just even after the game, from a media standpoint, you got to get to the interviews across the street. Well, that's not an easy thing to do right now to get across the street because they've torn up everything, you know. So you got to walk through the back of the baseball stadium and do all it's you do get a sense. You have more of a sense this year than you've had, but no, it's not a finished product. And I think it will be nice once they get it done. But I tell you, they haven't really been in a hurry with it.
No doubt. Gentry, really great stuff as always. Appreciate your taking time to be with us. Enjoyed your coverage of this on Saturday night, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Enjoyed it. Good job being there. I felt you felt it coming. I felt you felt it coming.
That's right. No doubt. Rex Road did not. Tough one for old
Rex
Joe.
Rex Road, really bad showing by Joe. Was he already in Florida?
He was.
Oh, God.
He left that day, then ended up missing the game of the century.
I mean,
at Vanderbilt.
It is really just I think we should lay off. It's just elder abuse.
615.
Gout abuse.
1025. Our phone number. We'll react to what Gentry had to say. Take more of your thoughts on Vanderbilt's upset against Alabama. Coming up next, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Tune in to 93.3 FM Totally Hits Nashville this Thursday for MTSU football. Blue Raiders taking on Louisiana Tech on the road. Pregame at 5:30, kickoff at 7 o'clock. MTSU football coverage on 93.3 FM Totally Hits Nashville presented by Sloan's Motorcycle ATV. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. So, PK, I got to ask, what were you doing on Saturday night? When did you see what was going on with Vanderbilt and Alabama? When they actually pulled it off and they took down Alabama, what went through your mind?
Holy bleep, holy bleep, holy bleep. That's generally my thought. I actually so what time did it end?
Right around, I don't know, 6:30, 6:45, somewhere in that neighborhood.
All right, the Yankees started right around 6:30.
Yep.
And as big as that was, my allegiance to the Yankees trumps all. And so I was flipping back and forth, and I didn't flip for the end. So I think Alabama was getting the ball back maybe for the last time, and I was thinking, well, this is going to be interesting. I flipped to the Yankees and kind of lost my place in it. When I flipped back, the interview was going on. I don't want to be critical of anything. I don't want to see the guy's family, all his boys jumping all over him and that. Like, family, stay over there until he's done with the interview. And then it's so funny. I'm not being critical of this. I think this is funny where he's praising God and all of that. And then the F-bombing.
F-bombs just start flying. God gave me a vision. Bleep.
And we're bleeping turn. But then I stayed on it a while to watch, the scene there, and then I was flipping back as it went to news, and we saw what was going on with the goalposts and taking in the scene and kind of getting the vibe. I do think it's a kind of where were you at the moment, Nashville Sports Day. As we said, there haven't been that many of those moments.
Yep.
The tennis ball was Shinsis.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the Music City Miracle, for sure. And that was, pre-social media. That's number one. You had the, Preds punching their ticket to the cup final that night. The place was going crazy. Like, downtown was nuts.
Yeah. Downtown, the streets were.
It was just unbelievable.
On fire.
Yeah. Obviously the cup final itself. But, like, there's not a ton. Like, the Titans going to the Super Bowl, that happened in Jacksonville when they punched their ticket for that. And like we talked about,
most people were watching at home or with friends.
And there haven't been a ton of home playoff successful games for the Titans to speak of in recent memory. So
yeah.
And by haven't been a ton, there have been zero to speak of.
Think if you're going off the top of your head, Music City Miracle, Preds clinching their conference to go to the Stanley Cup, and this in the last 30 years would be the three moments.
Yeah. I would agree.
Middle beating Duke.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's...
It's fourth.
Yeah.
Was a big one.
That's a big one. But there's not been a ton to choose from. And you bring up the interesting question. Because, look, they've been the story in all of sports, certainly in college football over the weekend. Like, it's been incredible. And they were all over the place yesterday, soaking it all in, and they should. Like, Vanderbilt should lean as hard into that as they want to lean into it. I am interested to see now, like, what you do with it, because that program's needed something like this for a long time. They never approached anything like this. So now that you've done it, how do you build on it? Like, if you go out and lay an egg against Kentucky this weekend, does that cheapen it in any way? Like, I'm with Gentry from the standpoint of, like, you can't just go out there and lose every other game. It would be great to see them now particularly get to a bowl game, get to six wins and turn it into something, some sort of postseason success that way. But I am interested to see, like, can you, for lack of a better term, like, can you handle the moment? Like, how do you move past this and make sure it's not just some one-off if you're Clark Lee?
Yeah, but I don't think you can cheapen it no matter what you do. Like, as a standalone moment,
agreed,
it's got all the merits in the world. But you need to build on it in terms of, like, show that you're mature and that you don't come out against Kentucky and have absolutely nothing and show that your gas tank is depleted and all of that. That would be immature. That would show that Lee couldn't convey the important things to his team or get through to them. But I think also on a parallel track going on at the same time, you're talking about transfer portal. You're talking about, the recruiting pitch now has a whole new element to it.
Yep.
Why would I come there? Well, you come here because you can be part of something like that. You come here because we're growing into a program that can do things like that on a more consistent and regular basis. You come here because our stadium is about to be finished and Nick Saban's talking crap about it, but it's gradually now going to turn from crimson to gold because people are coming expecting to see that.
Yeah.
And we're going to deliver that. I mean, the whole sales pitch is transformed to a degree. And I mean, there are a lot of areas where Clark Lee, the early faith in Clark Lee, maybe had cause to fade. But here's an area where he gets a lot of buyback.
No doubt. No, for sure. I mean, we were talking heading into the season. I mean, just the way their schedule set up. you know, this is before we ever saw Diego Pavia play a down for him. But before, you know, when their schedule set up, it was setting up for two or three wins. They're just on paper looking at it. I think their over under win total heading into the year was 2.5. So, like that was the expectation. They've already passed that. And then when you get something like this, it totally resets where the bar is in the program. And like you said earlier in the show, they legitimately could be 5-0.
Yeah, it's also laced with some disappointment over two games that just you can't lose the Georgia State.
No. The Georgia State one is inexplicable to me. And Missouri, they had right there on the ropes, and they should have won that game. And, you know, you miss a kick, and all of a sudden you end up on the wrong side of that. But I'm really interested to see where they go from here. John on the text line, can Vandy beat Tennessee this season, or was this a fluke? You know, we talked about this a little bit yesterday. Vols got a lot to work on with their passing game. It's broken right now. So, you know, right now, I think they've got a shot. Now, I'd still pick Tennessee. I think once the game comes around, people are going to pick Tennessee to win that game.
But calling it a fluke, I mean, it was on this day, Vandy was better.
Yeah.
It's not a fluke in terms of, like, I don't know. You can categorize it as a fluke in, like, oh, my goodness, look what Vandy did today. But you can't categorize it as a fluke in, like,
watching the game play out.
Right.
Yeah. Like, it was 60 minutes of they had no answer for Vanderbilt's offense.
Yeah.
And that there was nothing fluky about that. Now,
do other good teams, does Tennessee, who's a good team despite what their failures in Arkansas, which get overshadowed, by the way, they're getting a real pass because of what Vanderbilt did. But is Tennessee able to look at that tape of Vanderbilt executing their stuff very, very well and plan for it better because they've now seen it done very, very well? That's the chess game now. And can Vandy wrinkle off of it better and execute it even better? You know, those are the questions going forward. But there are going to be more eyes on Vanderbilt now.
No doubt.
To see that. I think a Vanderbilt-Tennessee game, that's a watcher.
There's a legitimate intrigue to it that I did not think would be there.
Yeah, Vanderbilt-Kentucky has a lot of intrigue to it now.
No doubt. 615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll get back into the Titans coming up next. Take more of your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game.
What did the bye week process kind of look like for Jeff? I know he has the elbow that he's dealing with. How did you go about managing that?
Well, same as the rest of the guys that are, you know, they get their treatment, they make sure they're taking care of what they got to take care of. You try to let them still get a day or two out, and, you know, you only get one of these over the course of 17 games. So take the rest when it's provided, and everything else seems good. He'll be working through that elbow injury this week, and we'll see where he stands, but hopeful that he's ready to roll.
For you, as you watch him, like, is that kind of like a pain tolerance? Is there a concern that it could actually get worse, or how do you approach it?
It's really up to him. These guys know their bodies and our training staff. You know, I'm not the doctor on those things, and they rely on those opinions. And again, everything that we had prior to and at this point is that it needed a little bit of time to heal, and that they would be better in a week's time, he'd be better in 2 weeks' time, and that was the genesis behind the decision to sit him on Monday night, is that he'd be able to, in really 2 weeks' time from the injury, would be a much better spot. So ultimately, that's where we landed on it, because it would be in his best interest for longevity's case, to keep him out.
That's Brian Callahan on Jeffrey Simmons and the injury he's dealing with. We'll see what his status looks like on Sunday as the Titans prepare for the Indianapolis Colts. Taking your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025. PK, we had Mike Herndon on earlier. He brought up, you know, we talked about the defense. If you go strictly by yardage per game, they're great. They're number one in the league. It's been awesome from that standpoint on the Titans. Now, you do factor in, you know, the Chicago game where they did a great job against Caleb Williams. They held the offense as a whole to less than 150 yards. And then when you get the gift of playing against Tyler Huntley and that joke of an offense we saw from Miami on Monday night, that influences your numbers as well. You know, Herndon brought up the lack of a pass rush. You're seeing it from Harold Landry. That's about it right now from the Tennessee Titans. I'm looking at just what they've got available to them with the roster. And if the answer is not coming from Jeffrey Simmons in terms of more pressures, and Herndon threw the stat out there, he's got two so far, which is nowhere near good enough. Now, he didn't play in one game. It's two and three games, but they need more from him than that. If it's not coming from Jeffrey Simmons, I don't really know where it's coming from because, you know, Arden Key, all due respect, I'm not sure you're getting a ton of pressures from him, not a ton of pressure on the quarterback. Landry needs help, and I wonder where it's coming from purely a pass rushing standpoint as the season goes along here.
Blitzes. It's got
to
come from blitzes.
It's going to have to.
I mean, it's not coming from remember how excited we were about Jalen Harrell?
Yeah.
I mean, remember how excited we were about James Williams? I mean,
should be a good reminder of preseason talk just being exactly that.
I mean,
preseason.
The draft is about Latham and Sweat and Brownlee. And that's where you're getting your help this year. And the rest of it really is about long term. But that pass rush is going to be an issue. And I think it needs to come in the form of blitz help with Murray, with Ernest Jones, with defensive backs. Expected Jamal Adams to be involved there. Jamal Adams hardly plays.
Yep.
They haven't really found a role or a niche for him. This big nickel hasn't been a thing. You know, Diggs is one of the defenders who's on the rise. I think has gotten progressively better. Maybe we'll see him involved a little bit in coming. You know, I think the defense is good, not great. You know, the takeaway thing is a problem. I've said this time and time again, you know. And Ernest Jones said this very well, I think, after the third game. We play good defense when it's not that important, and when it's important, we don't.
Yep.
And I think that's very self-aware and it was very true. You know, Miami game's a wash, but against the Jets, they gave up that the game-winning drive at the crucial moments. The turnover thing's a big, big issue. You know, they gave up those big conversions against Green Bay to Malik Willis and a loss to a second-string quarterback there. So they're not without fault. They're not the big problem by any means, but they're not without fault. Simmons is talking about, I do my job, you know, when this is a guy that you expect to go above and beyond and now may be limited by this elbow. So they're not without concern by any means.
No doubt. And, you know, Landry – yeah, you know, the production's there. He's got four sacks in four games. I mean, he's on 17 sack pace at the moment. But it's going to take more than that. And you know, Herndon brings up the point, and I think it's a good one. You know, if you're not affecting the quarterback, it's hard to expect those turnover numbers to get a lot better. I mean, the one turnover that they've forced on the defensive side of the ball right now has been the backward pass, right? So, you know, it wasn't really forced. It was a gift that you willingly accepted, which is great, but it's hard to get there. Now, you know, they did have the safety that they forced too, so if you want to count that, then that's fine. But it's hard to imagine, if you're not affecting the quarterback more than they are right now, where the turnovers are going to ultimately end up becoming from. Like, you'd like to see, you know, Snead come up with a couple or Hooker come up with a couple in the back end, but, like, you know, they are going to, especially when you move into like the Buffaloes and the Detroits of the world coming up here in a few weeks, it's hard to envision the Titans having a chance to win those games if you're not creating a couple of turnovers in those games. And it's the NFL, and crazier things have happened than the Titans sneaking up and beating either the Bills or the Lions. But in order to do that, you're going to have to find a way to create some more turnovers with way more regularity than what we're seeing right now.
And the other thing about these defensive numbers, which I don't have in front of me, is, you know, it's nice to have them, but I do have the offensive numbers in front of me. They're 32nd in offense.
Correct.
31st in pass offense and 29th in rush offense. So, you know, when you're so heavily slanted on one side of the ball so bad, it's somewhat natural that the other side is good. You know, it's like when generally when you're the number one pass offense in the league, your run offense isn't that good.
Not
because
great.
It doesn't need to be. So
right.
Those things counterbalance.
No doubt. And then on the offensive side, we've talked about this. I mean, there's a lot to fix and to improve upon as the season continues on here. you know, Levis with the injury he's dealing with. First off, we'll see what that looks like throughout the week. But your expectation is that he'll be fine on Sunday against Indianapolis.
Yeah.
So what does that look like? Is there a noticeable improvement in the drop back passing game as they move ahead here? And we kind of went through the layers of that a little bit earlier and what that could look like. But if you don't start to see that soon, then that becomes really concerning to me. And Brian Callahan, I don't have any grand sweeping takeaways of Callahan as a play caller yet or anything like that. Like, I think it's much too early to really have those at this point. But I am interested to see how he adjusts after the bye week to try to generate some of these plays with the offense that just for the most part haven't been there. Like, the most explosive plays this year, there have been a couple of times that Pollard has gotten loose in the running game. You had the one play down the field that the ball kind of fit in between the Ridley and the Jets game. Other than that, there's not much to speak of when it comes to explosive plays with this offense.
Not enough. And need to go back and look at the phrasing that Callahan used. But I think it was in the preseason. It might have been in the spring or even before that. But he said there's scheme for everything, basically.
Yep.
Remember that?
Yep.
Well, if there's scheme for everything, we're not seeing it.
Right.
And I think he's referring to that when he's saying he's not doing enough. But if they're scheme for everything, they got to get to it. Because, you know, they're averaging 20, they're 20th in points. And that 30 game is a nice outbreak, though it came unnaturally.
It did.
I think most of us would say.
Yes.
But if you're betting on what they're going to score on a weekly basis, you're still picking 17.
Correct.
Right?
That's the magic number.
And it needs to be more than that. So here's hoping that that 30 helps them do something differently. But you're going to need to drive. You're going to need to get in the red zone, not kick field goals from outside it, and you're going to need to find touchdowns.
One guy in particular that I think could be a big part of that moving forward I want to ask you about coming up next. We'll do that. 615-737-1025. Our phone number, more of your thoughts on the Titans coming up. Join Jared Stillman, Chris Sanders, and Derek Mason at John Bon Jovi's Nashville this Sunday for the pregame show from 9:30 to 11:30. They'll break down the Titans' Week 6 matchup against the Colts, give you the latest updates before the game. Pregame show presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment, Sundeck Nashville, Sloan's Motorcycle ATV, and award-winning Blue Note Juke Joint and Blue Note Crossroads Bourbon. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 the game. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharski, Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning, taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, which are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 19 targets, 9 catches for Calvin Ridley through 4 games. 9 catches for 141 yards, 1 touchdown, which means, if I can do some quick math,
I think it's
real
2
quick,
and a quarter.
Yeah, 2 game. And a quarter a game, and you're talking about a guy that is now on pace for 599 yards that you're paying $23 million to. Obviously, they got to find a way to get him going. How much of it is on him? How much of it is on the protection, the quarterback? I don't know. But I know this, 9 catches for 141 yards and a touchdown through 4 games for Calvin Ridley is not acceptable. That's of the offensive things that they got to get figured out. Getting Ridley the ball and getting him involved and him forcing his way into that has got to be near the top of that list as they get things going again on Sunday.
I just think it sounds too simple sometimes, and force it.
Yep.
Call plays where he is primary more often, and force it that way. Also, you know, I cite this all the time. Steve McNair had trouble getting going early a lot. You could tell if he was on or off early a lot. His number one guy was Wycheck in terms of getting things going. And they simply called stuff early for him to get some completions and get in the flow of the game, throwing the Wycheck early.
Yep.
Now, I don't know if it's Ridley early, but I think they've got to find something for Levis early to get him into a rhythm. That could be Pollard. It could be a mix of guys. It could be a certain kind of play. But and I think the scripted stuff's been reasonably good. But I think getting him an early confidence rhythm is good. In terms of Ridley, I think there should be, you know, three passes a quarter where he's primary and – you know, you feel really good about the plays. These are three really good Ridley plays that we're calling on first or second down in high on our list.
Yeah.
And you just have to do it over and over and over. And you can't be surprised at the end of the game to say, oh, we only tried Ridley 2.25 times.
He's got six targets in the last 2 weeks, two catches for 14 yards. I mean, now, granted, I understand in the Miami game that it became pretty clear early in the game that that offense that Miami had wasn't going to be able to do anything. And they ran the ball a lot, and they were trying to run the clock. I get all that. But
Even then, you'd say, all right, well, we're going to run the ball a whole bunch. But on top of running the ball a whole bunch, we're going to get the ball in the hands of our big playmaker,
exactly,
who's Calvin Ridley. Because they're going to be paying attention to the run a lot, and there should be some stuff we're able to do, scheme for everything.
Yep.
Well, what's our scheme for when we're running a ton and we want to get the ball in the hands of our most dangerous guy?
Right. And, look, you know, the first couple weeks wasn't great from him by any stretch of the imagination, but it felt like they had something there. Like, you know, week one, 3 catches, 50 yards. Week two, 4 catches, 77 yards. He had the touchdown. Obviously, they handed the ball to him as well. So, they were finding ways to get him the ball. And it feels like, for whatever reason, I mean, he got shut down in the Green Bay game. It does feel like Hopkins is starting to get going a little bit just based on the way he's moving out there. Like the knee doesn't look like it's an issue with him anymore. But the idea is to get them both going at the same time. And they've, for whatever reason, they just have not come close to finding that. And is this the week it's going to happen? I don't know. It needs to be part of it. I mean, certainly the Titans need to run the ball this weekend against Indianapolis. You should have success running the football. But built into that needs to be what you're saying of finding ways to get this guy the football and generate, like, when you think explosive plays, Pollard can be a part of that for sure. Number one guy I think of when I think explosive plays in this offense is Ridley, right? And
yes,
he just hasn't been that so far.
And when you have success running the football, I mean, if they have success running the football against Indianapolis, which I think we all expect because Indianapolis has been susceptible to the run, then play action is built into that.
Yep.
I mean, that was the whole Tannehill-Henry offense. And so that opens you up. I mean, the Tannehill offense had a ton of big plays.
Yep.
Was built for big plays out of these very situations. So let's see some of that out of similar circumstances.
I got a text that says, after letting Vrabel and Henry go, the Titans are a team with no elite players, one of the worst quarterbacks in the league, and a rookie coach who is in way over his head. How can this get any better? Finally, we got a coach from another team with one win so far. I think it's, you know, I don't know that it's fair to say that Callahan is in over his head at this point. We're talking about a 4-game sample size.
I mean, how can this get any better? Things get better over time when you have new people. I think it's a little bit unreasonable to put a final verdict on a quarter of a season. Has it been good so far? No. But how can it get any better? I mean, you've seen Titans teams start poorly before and end up better. And look, I'm a Vrabel defender. I don't think he should have been fired. But he wasn't lighting the world on fire the last two seasons. He had bad rosters. And I think that was the root of things. But was it getting better at the end of last year?
No. No doubt.
So you're applying a double standard there.
Yeah. Callahan, I'm totally with you in terms of, like, I've expected more from a scheming standpoint, from a play-calling standpoint, than we've gotten to this point. I'm interested to see how that changes after the bye week and what that looks like. And part of me also, PK, just wonders with the offense, how much of it is just the quarterback is extremely limiting of what they can do right now. Like, you know, he's turning the ball over, obviously. Herndon brought up some of the luck that goes into that. They have lost every fumble that he's fumbled, which is kind of amazing. But, like, how much is it just he's not seeing the game at a high enough level right now where they can't do some of the things that they want to do offensively. I don't know.
Yeah,
I hope you figure that out moving forward.
As we talk scheme, you know, I probably, in what I've said, they're not factored that in much enough. Limited by the quarterback. But then you flip that on its head, and like we were saying last year, they were finding plays downfield with what he could do. So he's limiting what they can do and what they want to do, but it seems they're limiting what he can do and what he's good at.
Right.
So that circle is confusing.
How do you break it? Yeah, you got to find a way to get out of that. You know, the Ridley part of this, obviously that's priority one in the passing game, that connection. And that goes back to, you know, specifically the deep ball in camp. They couldn't get on the same page. Right now it's everything. Like 19 target. When you're targeting a guy and you've been unable to – and I know he's had a couple drops in there too, which would change the numbers. But 9 catches on 19 targets is not a good enough hit rate for that guy.
Oh, that's a terrible hit rate.
It's awful. And you got to – whatever it takes to fix that, that's got to be priority one in the passing game in terms of the concepts you're calling, whatever it is that you've got to get figured out from Callahan that way. That has to get dramatically better.
Yeah, there need to be more – I want to see more good throws from Levis. Now, there are a couple dropbacks in a game where he's, unbothered.
Yeah.
So where's the great throw from Levis? Where's the great route from Ridley?
Yep.
Let's see that happen.
PK, great stuff. We'll be back at it tomorrow.
Been a pleasure. I look forward to the early alarm tomorrow. Don't block the box. Be sure to lock your locks.
Jason Big Joe is coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.